America Weekend.
How you doing? Time for another Ingram Kudo. Ingram Kudo, the guys who plowed the upper level of the 59th Street Bridge. They plowed the road surface right off it. There is one place as you're coming down into Queens where you can look down to the lower level of the 59th Street Bridge. And there's a whole lot of cars waiting there. People saying, oh my God, yes, it is. You get the feeling like the whole thing is going right down in the East River. I was in the East River once. You don't want to do that. I mean, if that bridge collapsed in the East River, it hit the top of the water and just stay there.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. My next guest has released a book that is a true labor of love. It revolves around the life and career of, hands down, the greatest top 40 radio disc jockey of all time, Dan Ingram. WABC Radio in New York City was the epicenter of the medium that is radio in the 60s and 70s, and Dan was its star. The book is titled Hey Kemosabe, The Days and Nights of a Radio Idol. Its author is Dan Sun. It is my pleasure to say hello to Chris Ingram. Chris, welcome to America Weekend.
Oh, Ed, thanks so much. It's great to be on America Weekend, where people just talk to each other instead of trying to shout each other down all day.
What a concept, right? What a nice idea.
Yeah.
We like to say it's the future of talk radio, and I appreciate you saying that's very nice. WABC Radio was the soundtrack of millions of lives for two decades. Give us an idea just how big that radio station really was.
You know, there's so many examples I can think of. It's hard for people to even really believe these days how broad the reach was. I mean, I remember sitting in a car in traffic on the LIE on a hot summer day, the cars creeping by each other. One thing you started realizing is the song that's coming out of the window of the car next to you or the car you just went past is the same song that you're listening to on the radio, and it was always WABC.
It was amazing because it was a completely different world then in terms of technology, and everybody wasn't just, you know, off on different websites and listening to different MP3s. It had this communal effect. It's like everybody was in on it, and it was almost as if this party that really became the soundtrack of your life. Now, the book details not only Dan's life, but also the personalities that made WABC the most prolific music radio station ever. Tell me about some of those who you do detail in the book as well.
Well, of course, you're probably going to start with my dad's dear, dear friend, Ron Lundy. Cousin Bruce Morrow, who really tended to those teenage flocks. And Chuck Leonard, the first African-American jock on a major mainstream radio station.
And your dad was very instrumental in him coming to WABC. He told management, hey, take a listen to this guy. I think he'd be perfect. So your dad was very important for Chuck to get the job at ABC.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, he really believed that there was the best station, had the best talent. They were very unique individual personalities. It all worked, a lot more than just New York City, 38 states at nighttime.
I heard once your dad say something that he was upset because when the ratings came in, he was number 9 in Pittsburgh.
Right, exactly.
The book details not only Dan's life, but the journey from where he started to where he became. And when he got there, he became a tremendous, huge success. Now, you get feeling that once he got there, your dad made sure he enjoyed every minute of being Dan Ingram.
Oh, yeah. This was the 60s and 70s, after all, and there was a lot of fun to be had. And, yeah, there, you know, the fact is he partook. And, you know, I mean, writing the book, he knew what I was writing. You know, I was going to get into some of this stuff. And he did. They definitely enjoyed life. You know, you watch Mad Men on TV, and, you know, it's pretty much the same kind of lifestyle. They partied hardy and worked hard. That's, you know, and that was it was a fun era. It was an exciting era. And they were on that ride and going to take it as far as they could.
And it's funny when you brought up Mad Men, because that is the feeling that I had. I actually thought about Mad Men in a couple of the scenes when you read, like, you know, the smoky wooden bar. And you can kind of you know, with the Brill cream, everything just right in place and everything perfect for the time. You can really get the flavor of what is going on at the time in the book. Getting into the aspect of radio itself and in terms of how he presented himself on the air. One of the traits that your dad believes in is that when you're on this side of the microphone, you're talking to just one person, one listener.
Absolutely.
Now, in the book, you talk about how he calls that contact. He brings that up when he's talking to a man named John Box when he's about to get hired at KBOX in Dallas. Tell me why and how your father thinks that is so important as a performer.
Well, especially on radio. It's unique more than anything to radio. What you're doing is you're making contact with that person. His first experience with it, he told me, was he was working, I think it was WALK in Patchogue, Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Christmas day or something. He got, you know, the lousy shift. He's a new guy playing the music and just wondering if anybody was even listening. He just went on the mic and said, listen, is anybody out there? Can anybody hear me? And the phone just lit up, and he realized he had actually made contact with those listeners.
Yeah.
A personal relationship. And to him, that has always been number one.
You're living in that time. Your dad is a huge star to everyone who turned on a radio in New York and for surrounding states all around. But to you, he's dad. What was that like to essentially, I guess for lack of a better term, share your father with everybody else in a very unique way?
You know, it's kind of funny because we had eight kids in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all at different ages and different levels of development. And, you know, with the older kids, oh, that's just so uncool, man. You know, they were sort of embarrassed by it. You know, you walk down the hallway in elementary school and people would sing the jingle at you, Dan Ingram. But to me, I thought, when I look back at it, I realized it was just that sort of youthful inarticulacy. You know, they don't know how they want to say, but they want to say, wow, your father's famous or whatever. But I was at a certain age, and maybe it was just the sweet spot for me because I loved him. I thought he was cool. I thought what he did was amazing. I couldn't believe that I could turn on a radio anywhere and he'd be there. So to me, it was great. I mean, I remember, you know, we didn't play a lot of baseball, a lot of catch. But what we did do, and I don't know how many kids can say this, I learned to edit audio tape on the knee of my father when I was 8 years old.
How cool is that?
With a razor blade and editorial block.
Very, very nice. Following your dad into the family business, there is an amazingly poignant portion of the book that details a night in the autumn of 1962, the night when Dan's wife and your mom was killed in a car accident on the Southern State Parkway. How difficult was that for you to have to harness those feelings and take pen to paper and be able to relive that? Now, obviously, you have millions of times through the years, but how difficult was it for you to relive it now in this way, to tell other people about that? And how did your dad feel about you bringing this up in the book?
You know, it's funny. Nobody's ever asked me that before, and I think it's an important question. I mean, to me, that was the hardest thing to write because it really stirred up these emotions that I hadn't really dwelled in for a long time. To me, as I was writing it, I realized that it really was sort of the springboard to some of the kind of wildness that he the way he lived his life later, or in his life after she was gone. To me, I started realizing that, you know what, when you're very, or as I said in the book, not just your moral compass, but your true north has been lost.
Right.
Now, what do you do? How do you respond? Do you just keep living life the way you did? Or do you start maybe sowing some oats that you realize maybe you're never going to have a chance to sow again?
Sure.
So to me, it was really kind of an eye-opening experience. It was difficult to write. It was, you know, I had to kind of stop writing a few times and just kind of take a deep breath. I had to attack it several times, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But in writing it, it was A, kind of therapeutic, and B, I think it helped me understand my dad a lot more.
And that's very important. I mean, it's almost cathartic in having to write something like that and to relive it. When you went to your dad and said, you know, Dad, I'm going to write this book and I'm going to tell this chapter and explain this story, because quite honestly, you know, people that know of Dan Ingram and know of WABC and, you know, the air checks and everything else, they don't really know this part of the story. What was his reaction when you said, Dad, I'm going to tell this part of the story?
Well, I think there was some trepidation, A, because I know he respects me, but, you know, it's very sensitive material, and if it's not handled properly or handled well, it'd be really, frankly, cloying and cheap. I like to think I handled it well. I know he thinks I did. In fact, I think it's his favorite chapter. He tends to go back and read that chapter, you know, when he's just, you know, fiddling around with the magazines or books. He sees the book, he'll kind of go back through that chapter. So, I mean, he knew that he was going to be exposed in ways he's never really exposed himself before on the radio. And I think, in a way, I think maybe just in a slight way, I think he likes that. He likes the fact that maybe people will know him better, or for more than just is not the right word, but more than the radio star.
And the way it's written, it's beautifully written. That section is respectfully written, and it's a tremendous read. Bringing back the WABC theme, collective loss as well. 60s, a very difficult time, and WABC and the men behind that microphone needed to, I guess you could say, maybe steward and almost shepherd millions of people through some very difficult times. That is an amazing responsibility.
Absolute upheaval going on, from assassinations to war, to launches to the moon, all, you know, the gamut of human experience going on. These DJs were living through it too, but at the same time, they had to put that aside and do their jobs, and that was to shepherd us through these periods, these rough spots, as it were, and at the same time, keep you know, keep bringing in the income and keep the songs playing.
The amount of talent, the amount of compassion that the person behind the microphone has to have, and you cannot fake that. It's either there or it's not there, and it's really bringing a human side to your craft.
Yeah, absolutely, Ed. You're absolutely right, and that's so well put, because people do flock to the radio at times like this. It is the, you can go back to FDR and beyond. It is the place we can all gather.
And the book itself is an absolute wonderful read. Again, the book is Hey Kemosabe, The Days and Nights of a Radio Idol. It is available on Amazon. It's a great read. You know, and if you know someone who grew up in the Northeast in the 60s or 70s, it makes a wonderful gift. Well, Chris Ingram, best of luck with the book. Please give your dad my best regards, and in all seriousness, thank him for helping jumpstart the bug in me that brings me here today. And I really do appreciate your time for joining us today on America Weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Ed.
I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Gain resale value knowledge by attending a motorcycle auction. We watched a night train go for $500 shy of a brand new bike. Never fall in love with an auction bike. Today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. ABM walked between rows of used, abused, and repoed Harley Davidsons, figuring to buy one and rebuild a basket case. One couple fawned over the only HD night train. The train was beautiful. The couple talked themselves into buying the bike before bidding began, coming to within $500 of the MSRP of a new bike they could have walked next door and picked off the showroom floor. Motorcycle auction lesson number one. Prepare to walk away. Never fall in love.
Never fall in love.
Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.
Think green. Ethanol as the solution fuel is raising more eyebrows. Harrison with you. Science warns that the biofuel promise may make things worse than better. We now know that corn-based ethanol emits more carbon dioxide per gallon than gasoline and generates for your car fewer miles per gallon, while also tearing on car engines, especially older ones. The bitter irony as well? Well, today we're now competing with our cars for food, since ethanol now consumes almost a full quarter of America's corn crop. Made more significant since global warming's reduced the world's grain and seed production by some 30%. Common sense again concludes that driving fewer miles in lighter vehicles means you get to have your corn and eat it too. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.